Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the 12 Stocks for the 12 Days of Christmas review show. So I guess we're going to start at the beginning, Kev, in terms of running order. The first podcast we released was obviously the Christmas Day podcast, which was, I believe, was Jubilee Metals. We chose that one, not in any order, as I say. There was no order of preference, and there was just the running order there. So, yeah, talk us through Jubilee Metals and the rationale behind that choice.
Well, I've got a few positives and negatives about them, and you know, you have to make your own mind up also, obviously, from the podcast. But I think the main reason why we chose them is the potential for massive copper increased production in Zambia in 2024 with the partner with very deep pockets, IOH Holdings from Abu Dhabi, and they're going to be basically funding the whole thing. So the capex costs that Jubilee have been incurring for the last couple of years of $50 million plus are not going to be there anymore. They've done their expansion on chrome and PGM, and that's going to continue to produce huge amounts of revenue and profit. And that's without them expanding into new territories. I suppose the complaints everybody's been given about Jubilee in the past is time overruns and how long all of this takes. Because it hasn't been a case that they have never achieved the things, that just takes them longer than they anticipate. But there seems to be a bit of a sea change in them raising the money before Christmas so that they can get these plants on the go as quickly as possible. So, yeah, I am very encouraged by it. I see them being a massive recycling giant, actually, or reclamation giant, especially of copper. And copper seems to be the thing of the moment, doesn't it, really? I mean, that's one of the themes of our 12 stocks. You will see that there is a fair amount of copper involved in it. And yeah, this is one of the plays in production, big market cap in terms of our normal choices. But we really think this has got potential to be, the major of the majors, if you like, in terms of reclamation.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's poised for 2024. I think that there's been a lot of setbacks that they've overcome through the flooding, etc., and the power issues that they've suffered in Zambia. But obviously, we saw the Roan concentrator, we saw the Kabwe operations. You know, the things are ramping up. They've got the Mopani slag project. They've got the Mufulira slag project. Great investment there from IRH, who have also, believe it or not, gone into the Mopani, the actual state-owned mines. They funded it to the tune of $1.7 billion. So they've got super, super deep pockets. And they see Zambia as opportunities there. And, you know, they're not just going to go in this willy-nilly. They are in there with bring back a state-owned operation of Mopani. You know, it's a massive, massive asset. It's probably one of the biggest mines, copper mines in the world. So ultimately, they're not messing around. 30% effectively free carry, probably more when you look at the numbers. And ultimately, the operations in Yoni there with the platinum group metals and the chrome are all looking good as well. So, you know, they've wiped off a lot of the debt that they had. Any legacy debt has gone, and their revenue numbers are looking good, and their profit numbers are increasing all the time. So for me, Jubilee looks poised for 2024.
Okay, so the next podcast that came out on Boxing Day was Golden Metal Resources with our friend Oliver. I'm conscious that people have all criticized us as a podcast for not giving you the negatives as well as the positives. So I'm going to try and correct this in some way, shape or form as we move forward. So I'm going to give you the negatives of Golden Metal Resources. If they don't get any grants, it's not going to look good in the US because they're going to need the cash to develop these processes. So that is one thing that is definitely a negative, something that we're waiting on. Now, a positive is the exact opposite of that, which means grants from the US government for the tungsten are going to come. Do we think it's likely? Does Oliver think it's likely? I think he does, but he can't guarantee anything, and neither can we. If they get the grant for the tungsten with the largest undeveloped tungsten resource in the United States, and really there is no equal to it, then in my view, this stock is going to do exceptionally well. It also has assets, copper, which looks very prospective. It has the gold with the Carlin-type deposit in Nevada, which is the biggest gold mines in Nevada, basically, are all this way. And also the lithium also looks extremely prospective, again, in Nevada. So all of these assets are all in Nevada, one of the best mining districts in the world. And I think all round, when you look at tungsten, copper, gold, lithium, could you have picked a better group of assets? I'm not sure. And you've also got a young, knowledgeable and energetic CEO in Oliver with skin in the game. And to be honest with you, I'm backing Oliver. I think he's basically going to produce something that will make money. And I think that's basically why we chose Gold Metal Resources. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I think you said it well. Like any investment, there's negatives there or potential negatives that you've got to look at. But I think the positives outweigh them. I think the jurisdiction's good. I think with the recent grants that we've seen from defense for the likes of Blencar Resources, as an example, they've got the grant there from the defense. And I think there's you know, potential for that to happen within Golden Metal going forward. It's the spending is needed for defense. We've seen, you know, the terrible situations going on around, you know, Ukraine, Russia, the Palestine, Israeli conflict going on. It never has been probably more of a greater time to invest in defense.
Yeah, and the other thing that I've seen Oliver tweeting quite a bit is this fusion and how much tungsten is required in this fusion situation. And it's huge. Like it couldn't be dealt with, I think, in terms of volume, if some of these fusion reactors are actually put into practice. So this is going to put a pressure on tungsten as a metal as well in terms of its requirement. So the US have already banned imports of tungsten from China from 2026. Which seems a bit crazy considering they actually don't have any homegrown tungsten as we speak. So surely they've got to correct that imbalance by 2026, which would give you a good hope that as Golden Metal Resources owns Pilot Mountain and it is basically the main chance of tungsten being available in the US, then there's a good chance it's going to happen.
Well, they've already, I mean, they entered into a non-binding MOU, didn't they, with Oxford Sigma, which is basically the two parties potentially could collaborate to explore and develop the critical metal supply pathways for that tungsten alloy and tungsten-containing materials for the fusion industry. So, I mean, Oxford have got you've got other MOUs with other listed companies as well out there. So it certainly does look good. And then there was also the Pilot Mountain key appointment, wasn't it? It was Alan Moran, respected modeling geologist with extensive previous working experience in Nevada and Western United States. So yeah, it all looks good. It all does look good on that one for sure. And as I say, interesting other critical metal pathway for as you just alluded to, as I say, for the fusion industry. So the next one is where we visited, actually. It went out on the 27th of December. It was Rwanda. So it's a Tyrian PLC, formerly Eastinco. What do you make of that one? I mean, it seems the market still hasn't really, I mean, it's early days yet, but seems like there's some movement needed.
Yeah, joint venture with Rio over a large area, which we stood on, and targets for lithium pegmatites. Yeah, I mean, it could be vast in Rwanda. And on top of that, within the Rwanda, you've obviously got the trading arm, which I fully expect will be up and running in January, and they start to create some revenues from that, which will in time make the company self-sufficient, which is going to be obviously good. Downside, cash flow, I suppose there's quite a lot of warrants to dilute, but it'll also bring extra cash in that they're going to be coming in the next period of time as the share price goes up at 1p and 1.2p. And then you've got Morocco and a potential large-scale copper assets, with majors doing due diligence on all sorts of copper assets all over the world. Fully expect that there'll be some movement in terms of those assets. They have a lot of copper and silver, I think, in Morocco. Market cap £8 million with a joint venture with Rio Tinto in Rwanda, who moved into the country specifically for this asset. Yeah, seems ridiculously cheap, to be honest.
Yeah, indeed. So next one, or was released on the 28th, was Sapangai. So Sovereign Metal. We had a good chat with Sapan. I know this one has started to come onto people's radar now. And a few people contacted me saying, actually looked into the company after hearing the podcast go out between Christmas and New Year. So that was good to see, getting a bit of traction there. I know Sapan also did, I think, a Q&A in one of the Telegram groups, which was very well received. And there was a lot of glowing comments about the way he talked. So that was also good to see. So, Yeah, I mean, this one is, it's beggars belief, really, that the company with a net present value, with an IRR on that project, with the, yeah, it was even the NPV on it as well, and the annual EBIT from that, is the numbers are pretty phenomenal, really, when you look at them. From an ESG perspective, the way that the rutile is hydro mined, it's very easy to get. It's friable material, very close to surface, so it can literally just be pulled out of the ground with these water cannons, this hydro mining technique. And yeah, Rio Tinto on board as a major investor in the company, 15% owners, with the option to take it to circa 19.99% as well going forward. So all looks very good for Sovereign Metals in 2024.
Yeah, and I mean, I think again, it's another Oliver situation where I also back Sappan. I think, you know, I think he has been serially successful in terms of one of the projects they found. They did find this project by mistake. Let's be honest, they were looking for the graphite in the first place, and then they find the rutile.
Yeah.
Now they have the rutile and the graphite, and they span out the other graphite assets, which is obviously also has a value for anyone who was holding Sovereign Metal in the past. But yeah, I mean, is it something that is materially going to be worth more because Rio Tinto own 15% of the stock and ultimately going to be assisting them to take it to the next stage? I think so. And that's one of the reasons why we've chosen it.
Next one went out on the 29th. That was Prospex Energy. We obviously caught up with Mark in the back end of last year, and we were probably as confused as he was as to why the stock had retraced back from some probably 60-65% from the year's highs, down from circa 20 pence down to 6-6.5 pence. I think it was around about that time anyway. But yeah, what do you think about 2024 for Prospex?
Yeah, I think revenue-wise from the gas production, it should do pretty well. I mean, basically, I think we're looking for the licenses or the drilling permits, I think, for Selwa field to take it up to possibly 2, 3, 4 times the production that it is currently now, which would make a massive difference, obviously. And not forgetting the assets in Spain, the solar panel situations, solar panel field that they're talking about doing there and have started, I think. So all of those things mean that a stock that at one point last year was, I think, 18p, to now be able to buy it for what? It's about 5p, I think, seems crazy value and one of the reasons why we chose it. The other thing is you have to understand that Mark Roth also very good guy, and he's looking for value. You know, this is an investment company as well, don't forget. It's not necessarily a production company. They're not getting their hands dirty. They're involved in the projects and financing. So once you start to have a company like that that has more and more financial cash flow, then you would imagine that they're going to put it in the right places, as they discussed before Christmas, to get more assets in Europe. Because we talked on the podcast yesterday about the need for the UK to have gas. Well, does Europe need gas? Boy, does Europe need gas, you know? So we've got Italy, Spain. Could there be other countries coming in, or could it be other places in Italy or Spain? I don't know. But they're looking to put new assets in place with low capital or low CapEx initially so that they can start to increase their base of assets. So yeah, that's basically, in a nutshell, where we picked them.
Moving on now, 30th of December, we spoke to Professor Richard Conroy and Kevin McNulty, Senior Geologist, Conroy Gold. Obviously, you and I attended site visit back end of November to visit the three of the assets. Actually, we went to Clay Lake, Clontibret, and Creamkill, didn't we, in the north, the asset that's actually into Northern Ireland. So yeah, what do you think? I mean, the share price just it beggars again. It's one of those that you see it around the 14p and you think, when is the market going to finally wake up to the fact that there is potentially a lot of gold in those hills?
I think most people have heard the story. Size of the district, 65 kilometers, and now they have two districts, so there's now 24 kilometer long strike, or 24 kilometers long district. They have a JORC 500,000 plus on Clontibret. Clay Lake shaping up to be a huge resource. as at an open pit scale. Demir Export have deep pockets. By mid-year, the election to go to the second phase by Demir is probable and likely. The downsides, cash flow funding themselves to keep 42.5% is going to be an issue in the future, but at the same time, they can have a free carry up to 25%. And I suppose we broached it with Professor Conroy as well, is who takes over the management, you know? The fact of the matter is he's not a young man anymore. I think he was 90 years old, was he, just recently? And the fact is he's not managing the business as it speaks. So, you know, put that to one side. I think all of those things are going to be sorted out and shouldn't really be an issue. And then I suppose the other thing is the length of time of licensing in Ireland. How long does it take? I think it takes a bit longer, so you're going to need patience. But my catalyst for this is Demir taking the next phase of this buy-in situation. So they'll go from 0 to 25%, because don't forget, the minute they spent all this money, they don't own anything. They'll go to 25% of the project. They'll go to the second stage, and then they will potentially go up to, I think it's 42.5%, is it themselves? I'm not sure. And then they go to 57.5%. So I'm not sure of the actual percentages there. Maybe you need to look those up. But that's the reason, because I think as soon as they indicate that that's the second scenario, they're basically indicating that this is worth spending another 10 million euros plus on to focus on one particular asset. My bet that's going to be Clay Lake, but who knows? What do you think?
So the first phase is basically was an earning 4.5 million euro spend, which by all accounts we've spoken to Professor Richard Cobroy, he said that obviously they've committed to that spend already, circa maybe 5 million euros, for an earning of 25% interest in the project. Then phase two is going to be expenditure for a minimum work of another 4.5 million to earn an additional 15%. So that'll take them to 40%. And then phase three, which is the funds required to a declaration of construction ready, and then they'll earn in an additional 17.5%, which will then move Demir to holding a 57.5% in the development. And then Conroy obviously would hold that 42.5% of the construction ready mine. Yeah, so the next one that went out on New Year's Eve was Acuity Risk Management, ACRM. We had a good chat with Angus Forrest, chairman, and Kerry Chambers, CEO of Acuity. And that, I mean, there's a few smaller wins, wasn't there, at all? Smaller contract wins towards the sort of middle of the year or Q3. And then in Q4, they announced their largest contract win to date. What are your thoughts on 2024 for Acuity? Do you think they just need to keep growing and building on these deals? And do you think they'll become positive in 24?
Well, I put that as sort of my negative, if there is a negative here, is that if they don't get any further contracts or the competitor or a competitor moves in on the space, then there's problems. But I think ultimately there's many competitors in the space already. And secondly, I think it's likely they will get further contracts, but if they don't, that's obviously going to cause a problem. Pipeline continues to grow and has grown. They have had regular new contracts, as you said, some of them smaller than others, but then there's been a big one at the end. I expect them to be cash flow positive in the first half of 2024, as has been predicted by Angus, and then profitable by the end of 2024. So effectively, you know, starting to actually show a profit. I think the positives are is that the SaaS model, which is software as a service. So in other words, you're giving your software as a service rather than just here's the software, use away, is highly valued in the market, you know, because it's basically a way of producing money on a regular basis for something that once you've created it, doesn't cost a lot more money. So there is demand for the software to protect risks in businesses. And that is actually growing rapidly across the world, that people want to protect their businesses more, both from a cyber point of view and from every other point of view as well, I think. And I think that's the one positive about the Stream situation, which is the name of the product that they have, that it can cover all sorts of areas. And we saw that and heard that in the interview as well, that they're going to be expanding out. So I have great hopes for that. And I think Angus hasn't been shy in saying that he's going to build this business to 5 million plus annual revenue. And then one of the big boys is probably going to buy it. So how much that's going to be, I don't know. But I think it's going to be many factors of what it is now. I mean, you can basically pick this up for 5p, and I think it could be worth, you know, it could be worth 10 times that. Whether it's that in 2024, probably doubt. But, you know, somebody comes in, likes the look of it, and wants to buy it to basically expand it to a much greater degree, then they're going to pay that at least. Yeah. So that's my
okay, well, New Year's Day now, Greatland Gold, Sean Day, probably one of the biggest characters that we you know, talk to on the podcast. Always fun to catch up with him. 23 has been, but the end of 23 has been a good year for them, hasn't it? In terms of, you know, adding market millions to the market cap, share price has moved up, probably done 100%, hasn't it? From the sort of, you know, last, well, certainly Q3 of 2023 into early Q1 24 has been a very good time. So do you think it's got, obviously it's got legs. We wouldn't be on the list if we didn't think so. But what do you think 24 has got in store for Greatland?
Well, there's a lot going on with Greatland, isn't it? I mean, they're about to hit the top of the ore body in 2024 and start to get the first ore, which, I mean, is a big thing for a gold mining company, if you like. Lots of exploration opportunities, including a JV with Rio Tinto. Now, that seems to have gone by the way for the market. You know, they're all concentrating on, you know, there's gold. But, you know, this is a gold copper play, not just gold. And definitely, I think the JV with Rio is good. And a lot of the other assets that they have managed now to get approval from First Nation and so on and so forth, which should allow them to move forward. Potential downside is if they continue to have the aquifer problems and an overrun in time. I don't think it's going to cause anything to not happen. But is there likely to be an overrun in time in terms of that? It's possible. And as you said, it did well towards the end of last year, going from sort of 6 to 11p, I think it was, but has now dropped back again to around that 9p. It was up last year, only minor, but we've chosen it again because we really don't think the value has been shown. You know, the size of this potential mine and the revenue with gold going forward could be, you know, pretty sensational. Every $100 or $50 extra on that gold price is going to gear this company up immensely going forward, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, if you like. That, you know, will it get back to a billion pound company that it was at one point on A?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. I think it's the assets they have are world-class down there. You know, we wish them all the success in 2024. Did you have your, what I know you tried to replicate the potato salad, ham and potato salad sandwich that you did, but did you enjoy it?
I did. I mean, it wasn't as outstanding as made it sound, but I did enjoy it. It was good. And I have made potato salad 3 times over Christmas, so maybe he's had some sort of subliminal effect on me. I've had it probably every day for the last 3 days because I made a big pile of it here when we got here. Yeah, but it's certainly not the star of my Christmas dinner. That would be the pork and sage stuffing every time of the day.
Next one was African Pioneer. We spoke to Olin and some of his associates in Zambia, didn't we, down there on the 2nd of January. Yeah, I mean, we went through some of the, basically, we talked a little bit about Namibia, didn't we? Went through some of their assets there. We went through, obviously, talked a lot about Zambia as well, and a little bit on the Kalahari Copper Belt assets in Botswana. So what do you think about, I mean, I know this is one we've talked about at length before. We saw Jonathan's has come on as a TR1 holder. We've seen that announced in the market. So ultimately, there's a bit of a buzz around it, and it did start to, volume started to pick up, didn't it, in the new year. We saw one of the first trading sessions with the volume, and we saw how quickly it swings from low twos up to the sort of high twos, and maybe into the three on the ask. What are your thoughts on that moving forward?
Well, I'll try and sort of stay reasoned about this one, but this is my super excited pick, if you like. If I had to pick one stock from these 12, not that I would put the house on, but one that I would suggest, the potential upside is just phenomenal. Potential world-class copper asset with First Quantum drilling it as we speak. It could dwarf the size of the market cap, but still the market cap is backed up by the Namibian assets and the Botswana licenses as well. So for me, you know, the potential upside in this, and yes, there is people saying that there is issues with First Quantum and the fact that Barrick Gold has been courting them. I think this is actually could be a company maker for First Quantum. and therefore allow them to say, no, we have an amazing project here in Zambia and you must back us for this. And because basically First Quantum have told Barrick to go away. Barrick have not gone away and started talking to some of their bigger investors. But still, I can see First Quantum, if they find what they think they're going to find, which is the big if, okay? So, you know, that's why, you know, don't put your house on it. But if they find it, then the scenario then is we are talking about a world-class copper asset just at the time that we need copper. And just at the time First Quantum need copper because of what's happened in Panama and the fact that their mine has been closed down. Now, Barrick is saying that they maybe have to rectify that for them in Panama. But anyway, there is lots of different stories around this. But the upshot of it, no matter what happens, whether Barrick buys First Quantum, whether they don't, the reality is the African Pioneer holds those licenses and First Quantum own 15% of African Pioneer as it is. The scenario is that I believe that that will be a major financial decision to be made if the copper is there, which I think in the first 4 or 5 months of this year, we will know. And if that happens, I don't even want to guess at the upside because it could just be unbelievable.
And in the end, how long do you think it's got? The probably reason a lot of investors probably don't want to tie money is because it's been sat there. What, it's listed in, was it 21, maybe late 21? Yeah, I think it was 21. Obviously, there's been a lot of work, but they're obviously at the mercy of First Quantum. They do the quarterly reporting. Obviously, we saw First Quantum exercise their rights to further the two licenses, weren't there? And then there's another two which they've got an option on, I think, until the middle of January. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see whether they take those. And I think that could be quite telling, actually. That will be some news that should come out in let's say, one of 24.
If that comes out as a yes, then I think you can't read everything into that, but you'll be reading quite a lot into it. And then I think you'll be talking March, April, you're going to get some assay results and some situation from First Quantum saying what they think they've found. And then, yeah, there'll be more drilling. But the game will then be in play, though, because it'll either be there or it won't. And that's another reason why we chose, if you listened yesterday, why we chose Extract, because Extract also has licenses very close to these licenses. That it owns itself. So we expected African Pioneer to do very well last year. There was delays on the Namibia project. We're going out to see that in the next sort of couple of months and we'll be able to report back a bit more on that. I expect that to move forward as well. So there are the potential downsides. There may be cash required for the Namibia project. It may well be that no cash is required if these projects come in and First Quantum say, we want to buy these licenses off you. And this is how much we're willing to give you, you know? And Colin's been a good negotiator. For all people don't say very nice things about him, the reality is he's had a great deal of success in different companies. Jubilee Metals, another one of our picks, wouldn't exist basically without him. First Quantum itself, he was part of the founding of that First Quantum. And he would tell you himself that the name First Quantum comes from a drill hole or something that they picked. And he sold one of the big mines in Zambia for hundreds of millions of dollars. So, yeah, ignore it at your peril is what I say in terms of African Pioneer. That's my view. We have a nice position. And as far as I'm concerned, I think it's one that potentially could do incredibly well.
Okay, so the next one was Chilbrands. Obviously, we spoke to Callum at length. There was an RNS that went out between just in the new year, which just basically went through what they've achieved to date. It was an update on the retail offering, the product strategy update, I think it was entitled, which went out on 3rd of January. They talked about the launch plans. They talked about basically the purchase orders and the process of, they're in the process of fulfilling those orders. We're all expecting to deliver the initial inventory during January 2024. They alluded to the fact that they're going to launch into the WH Smith travel locations, Morrison stores. Obviously, one of the top five UK supermarket announced on, which was announced on the 20th of December as well, previous one. I don't think they were actually named in that, but obviously in this RNS they've been named. And obviously roadside retail stores operating on Shell BP, so forecourts, with the rollout continuing incrementally throughout Q1. So, and then obviously we've also got the products. We're being launched into smoker-friendly stores in 9 US states with in-store sampling activation. So, lots of progress today on that one since Callum kind of changed the trajectory of the company, let's say, and moved into moved into the vaping space, the nicotine free vaping space.
Yeah, and another one that was on the list last year as well, and actually was the top performer last year, doing over 100%. 2,400 store rollout with a major supermarket and the US rollout, as you've already said. Potential for European countries to start in the first half of 2024, profitability in 2024, and cash flow positive at some point, probably middle of the year, maybe even earlier, depending on. It's actually a funny thing, isn't it? Because it could probably be profitable very shortly. But then if they get more big deals, then you got to finance those big deals and then carry on. So maybe the cash flow isn't positive because of those big deals. But is that a negative? I don't think so. And the supply of product in the UK now is here. I know they had a big delivery over Christmas. And the nicotine-free scenario, aiming at smoking cessation with a healthy attitude. And you've also got chill.com market, sort of a mini Amazon for alternative health products, which I think if Callum has his way, he's going to have 300 to 400 different brands on it by the end of 2024. And really, I think you should start to create a momentum and mind. Now, what everybody is worried about is legislation to take away these vapes and possibly taxation. Well, taxation, and we're only talking about the...
There is a risk. Let's talk about some of the risk, because you're absolutely right. The flip-flopping around, the government doesn't seem to have a handle on. One minute it's saying, we're going to ban all vapes, we're going to ban this, then it's not going to be just all vapes, it's going to be disposable vapes, and or we're going to make it illegal, we're going to change the packaging, you've got puff count issues. They've already started confiscating the ones that are coming in with illegal puff count sizes and things like that. We're seeing all the ones that are targeted at children with all the colourful packaging that are completely, basically. So there are things afoot. What are the risks going forward? For these, even though they're nicotine free and they probably don't sit under the nicotine umbrella, what are the risks for chill if some legislation comes in? And they won't come in tomorrow, but for 2025.
I think the risk is that they would have to change from disposable to non-disposable, and then effectively you have a system then, which is already in place. When I was in Dubai with Callum at the vape show, he already had a prototype of that, so it's available for production within a few weeks if they needed to do it. He's already put out what they want to do actually in one of the RNSs, and I don't have it to hand, but it basically stated that these are all the things they're trying to do to make sure that they're ahead of the curve rather than behind it. Are there risks? I think the main risk with chill.com is they don't sell the vapes. And I think that's also going to be put to bed over the next few months as people start to buy them in greater and greater quantity. And we've seen a very small example of that with the Amazon listing that, as Callum says, his phone dings every time they sell one on Amazon. So effectively he's getting ding, 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 ding all day because they're starting to sell a lot of them. I think it's a good product. I think the taste of it is very good. And I think people are going to buy into this.
Yeah.
Well, this is a less unhealthy alternative to magnesium vape.
Now they've got into the likes of big household names, WH Smith, Morrison's, whether there'll be, other retailers, big numbers will say, okay, the other big five will say, okay, we want to stock these products. We've seen how successful they've been in Morrison's. We like the packaging. They get some good feedback. It'll be interesting to see whether we get any further announcements on other retailers, other big supermarkets selling the brand, basically.
Much like I said about Oliver Friesen and about Sapan, probably the youngest CEO that we deal with is Callum. He's very, very thoughtful in what he does. He's very well prepared. He's obviously a lawyer at heart, and I think we're in safe hands there. Ultimately, why we've picked Chill again is because I'm backing him. He's had all these ideas to get to this point, and I don't see that changing, that the ideas are suddenly going to stop. So don't think this is a picture that's complete, because it's not. I think it will spread to many other places. We're talking about the Middle East, we're talking about Europe for the vapes, but I think there's other stories still to be had as well. And I think watch this space. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to watch how he develops. And you know, if he makes this into a big company, I can fully see that he'll be in control of much bigger companies and much bigger things as his career grows, because, you know, he's a clever guy and he has a good way about him about doing things. So I think, again, let's back the management of these companies that they can do things right. And that's one of the reasons why Chill.com or Chill Brands is on there, and the other two we mentioned, with COO in Sapart's case, who I think, you know, you can say, I trust this guy.
Okay, moving on. So 4th of January, we had Technology Minerals. We spoke to Alex Stanbury and Robin Brundle of the company. Good chat with them, as Robin alludes to all the time, or states. He was very chipper, so he was very happy with progress. Obviously, they just had the shareholder meeting, or just say the AGM on site in Wolverhampton, Libat, at the lithium iron recycling plant. So they were in good spirits when we spoke to them. 2024, obviously, there's been a few setbacks in 23, delays, waiting on EA approval, waiting on the variation of the license at the lead acid facility at Tipton, and which obviously is currently under commissioning, and hopefully we'll get an update on how things are progressing in maybe Q1 or Q2 of this year. So that one's one we're looking forward to. And obviously just starting to see these different, there's 18 different verticals of revenues, different revenue streams coming on board. Money coming in, gate fees, you know, the different fees and different methods that they can collect money and revenues and then put it down to the bottom line and actually see, you know, EBITDA positive in hopefully in 24 and into 25.
Yeah. If I had to choose a stock, just like I'm very...
No, you've had your choice. Mine's TM1 for next year.
Oh, I'm about to say what I'm going to say. If I had to choose a stock that I'm not excited about, that I am excited about, but doesn't seem to have to get over any hills or any obstacles, which AFCON Pioneer does. If it doesn't find the copper, alas, it doesn't find the copper. But if it does find the copper, amazing. But in Tech Minerals, or what we really should be calling it, is Recyclers Group RG1, which it will be very shortly. You've got black mass upgrading, separation. You've got another site in the equation. You've got only place currently UK to recycle all types of lithium ion batteries. They only need 10% of all the batteries in the UK that are available to actually hit production levels. If there's a downside, it's will they get the batteries short-term cash flow, but it is very short-term cash flow, because I think once the gate fees start coming in, then the game is ready to be played, if you like, and things are going to accelerate very fast. So I'm glad you've chosen it as your stock, if you like. I believe also it's going to do exceptionally well. I can see probably many factors of its current price, 1.4, 1.5p. And I think the story only begins in 2024. If they get things right, this is going to accelerate in 25 and 26 and 27, and could be one of those stocks that if you hold, you know, could really change your investing portfolio beyond what you'd expect, I think. So why did you choose it?
All the reasons I mentioned earlier on, that very close, well, not very close, but, you know, revenue generative, all the different mechanisms, the different verticals that have been alluded to in the past, as you just said, the black mass separation, the gate fees, there's just so many different kind of strings to the bow. And I think that it's poised now. It's overcome a lot of hurdles. There's been a lot of frustrating delays. And I think now, you know, they're talking about identifying the second site. This is the cookie cutter model that they've alluded to, whereby they build the plants. They want five of each. Whether they need that number, it might go bigger than that, it might go less. But ultimately, I think that the potential for generating good profits, not just revenues, but actual becoming EBITDA positive, is huge. So yeah, exciting. I think it's in a very, you know, it's a very topical space. Obviously the need for recycling of these batteries, as we've seen, you know, one car gets hit, EV gets damaged in an accident, insurers are insisting that the cars are written off and not just repaired and put back onto the market, because we've seen incidents of fire. So there is a big demand, there's a big growing problem of the requirement, as you say. You've got the the vapes as well, which just end up going into landfill. So it's fixing a big problem there that needs addressing. So yeah, definitely excited about it. There's a massive buzz on the bulletin boards and on the Telegram groups. People are very interested. There's quite a lot of shareholders who attended the AGM that has made some really, really good notes. Robin alluded to it on the podcast, and he's saying that, you know, everybody who visits the Liebat site seems to come away with a big smile on the face. So, and we've done the visit twice now, and we've seen big progress. I'd like to go back in this year, probably Q2, maybe April time. And I think we'll take a few investors, because quite a few of the people, I think Alan and people like that on the group have expressed an interest in it. So I think, yeah, definitely arrange something and go back. And I think we'll notice a big difference in progress to date from August, July, August time when we were last there. So very excited about TM1 in 24 and beyond.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the one thing that we didn't really factor in was this black mass separation, and the fact that actually that could get, you know, up to four times the value of the black mass. But more importantly, and I think this is what Robin was talking about, is politically, what does that do? It keeps the lithium and the black mass in the United Kingdom. So, you know, if you're having cars produced and you're going to have to certify that your battery has so much recycled product in it, and that's going to go up as time goes by, then you're going to have certified recycled lithium or black mass. And does that mean it's going to be worth more? I think it probably would, because there'll only be a certain amount of it, and you have to have a certain amount of it in your battery. So there's many nuances, I think, that could mean that the value of this, even Alex was talking about the fact that they only get £2,000 per ton for the copper at the minute. Naturally, they should be getting £6,000 per ton for copper. Well, what if copper goes to 12,000? You know, I mean, they're going to get more. So yeah, the potential for increase of revenues and all of those things is vast. Now, the reality of the situation is short-term cash is still required to get them over that short, small hump. But I think once this January, February, March comes in and they start receiving a fair number of batteries and getting the gate fees, then that's all finished. Gone. Yeah.
Okay. So the final one for the 5th of January was Celadon Pharmaceuticals. We had a good chat with Jim Short, CEO. Very exciting one for me, this in the pharma. We don't have many in the pharma space, pharmaceutical. Yeah, you visited the facility. I'll be going there hopefully early this year. What do you think about going forward? And obviously the contract or the joint venture deals, that obviously product supplied for the first two sales contracts, which was announced middle of December. They had a little bit of a fundraise, didn't they, as well in middle of December as well, which was well received. So give us your thoughts on Celadon going forward in 2024.
Well, Celadon, as you said, is a pharma. But the revenue for the next year or so is going to be generated, and ongoing, obviously, but generated from the sale of the cannabis flowers and that the facility will produce. But I think that's only part of the story. And you could have a couple of hundred million company from that alone, I think. But the real story is in the studies that they're doing. They've got one for pain relief, I think, in the UK. And they've also got one for childhood autism. And I think that's the real game changer. And on top of that, then you've got the potential for them to move into the US. And then it's a completely different ballgame. So
yeah,
a company that I think is for sure going places. And Jim himself is a very wealthy guy, personally. And he has the idea that this is worth billions. I don't disagree with him, but he's got to take it through stages to get to that. Now, boys had perseverance to get even to this point, going through all the issues in the UK to get the licenses and get the ability to do what he's doing. But it is run like an army, literally, in terms of everything has to be this, this. You know, you don't see Celadon outside the place because they can't advertise that because of security. And, you know, I think as an investment, if you're willing to have a longer term view, though I still think 2024 will do very well, but I think if you have a longer term view, this could be, you know, worth a huge amount of money. into the billions as a pharma play.
Good, yeah. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, really. I mean, there's not any more to be said about any of the companies, and other than let's hopefully we can sit back, watch the the fruits of these seeds, and yeah.
So I'll put you on the spot. If you had to choose three, what would they be?
Well, I've said one of them, and I'm technology minerals. I think I agree with your choice. I think African Pioneer, at the valuation with First Quantum, with the number of assets, not only a one-trick pony in Zambia. You've got the Namibian assets, which look really good, and obviously the Sand Fire joint venture as well, which is overlooked in the Kalahari Copper Belt. That looks really good, but certainly alone on that, the fact that First Quantum have exercised those first two options and we'll make a decision on the other two sort of middle of January, should hear something on that, then it looks very exciting. And when we talked to the other two colleagues of Colin on the podcast, and you urge you to listen to that, that was very interesting, wasn't it, hearing their thoughts on not just on their assets, but also on Zambia as a whole. So very excited about African Pioneer. And then the other one, I think as a real sort of small cap, the one of the smaller caps on there, Jubilee looks really, really, really good. I'm very excited about Jubilee. I think that it's been beaten down so much that the valuation at the moment is absolutely ridiculous based on their two slag projects / tailings projects. Obviously the one we alluded to with IRH, the big Abu Dhabi holdings company who've invested into the big state-owned Mopani shuttered mine there, which will be started back up for a 51% interest. That looks really, really good. But I think Aterion, just for the small, how small the cap is, to have a joint venture with Rio Tinto for the lithium asset that we visited, and I also have their comptoir for the trading operations for the tantalum, for the tin as well, and then also the Moroccan assets as well, looks brilliant. I think Aterion, I think the top three would be, in no particular order, would be TM1, AFP, Aterion.
So my top three, because I'm not going to choose TM1 because I'll let you have it. You know already I've said African Pioneer, so I'm taking African Pioneer as well. I think of all the small caps that we've got, I think Golden Metal Resources has got an incredible chance to do many factors of what it's worth now, based on the fact that the US comes through and actually supports it. If it doesn't, then shoot, you know? But I think it's got everything that has the potential. So Golden Metal Resources would be my second choice. And my third choice, as you know, because I'm a diehard Chill fan, will be Chill Brands, because I just believe this product's going to sell. And if this product truly sells in any quantity, then this really is going to be a game changer of a company. It's going to become a huge company. And if I'm a betting man, then someone like British American Tobacco are going to come in and write a big check. Either they're going to write a big check and say, we want part of the business, and then the business will carry on initially, and then they'll buy it all out, or they'll buy it all out straight away. And that won't be for, I don't know, I'm guessing, but it won't be for less than £100 million, I'm sure. And we're talking about market cap now of, what, 20-ish, 21, 22, I think it is. So big potential. But let's be honest, I haven't picked one single share in those 12 that I think there's a dire chance of it diving. And I think that was one of the things that we were really keen to look at. But we did the same last year, probably except for Helium 1, which ultimately we thought was going to find the helium and everything was going to be okay.
I'm sure there'll be some curveballs. That's what investing is. There'll be something, one or two of the companies may be in a completely different situation this time next year, you know, when we're talking about the review of them. Who knows, you know, crystal ball time, but they're always curveballs. Yeah. Some regulation, something potentially may happen. We just don't know. And that's what investing is, isn't it? You take the rough with the smooth.
And I think you've said it many times before, is that if you can get one share to excel,
yeah,
then, you know, it's going to make up a lot of ground for all of the others and that don't do well. But, I mean, we're in a situation where I think optimism has increased. I think I saw an article that Charles Archer put up there, which was basically saying, has fear been overtaken by greed? And ultimately, when we go into a bull market, greed starts to take over, and we put to the side the fear. And I think that's started to happen. I don't think it's completely happened, but I think it's started to happen, where people are starting to see the value in many things, and we see where we go from here. I mean, we both know by choosing African Pioneer, it is a hope, because there's no substance to the fact that there's definitely copper there. But at the same time, we know for a fact there's a resource in Namibia that they can mine for copper.
Yeah.
Now, is African Pioneer's current market cap worth more than what's in Namibia? I think it is. You know, what Namibia is worth more. So everything else is effectively a free ride in terms of that. So yeah, good luck with your choices. We hope that ramblings have allowed you to make some good decisions. And, you know, we will follow this through as we did last year. It was interesting, actually, because between when we announced what performance we'd done till the actual end of the year, the stocks had improved by about 8 or 9%. So we probably only ended the year down about 10% in total. But we're sticking to what we said anyway, and because we took the valuations from the time that we stopped there. So the next year will run till the day before Christmas as well, so that we can get a good idea of how well we've performed in terms of our stock choices.
Cool. Yeah, so roast back next week, back on the 14th of January for our first roast of the year. Yeah, so have a listen out for that one. Yeah, if you like what you've heard, hit the subscribe button and the bell icon for any further notifications of podcasts that will be released in due course. So thanks for listening, and wish you all a great 2024.
Indeed. Make peace reign somehow in our crazy world.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.